and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and as always, I'm really glad you've decided to join us. Freedom does not come easily, and it can't be taken for granted. Now, when I say that, it may sound like a cliche, a recitation of the obvious. But it's really something that defines the American existence and defines what it means to even be American for lots of people in this country. Go back, for instance, to a century and a half ago, when a group of African Americans in Galveston, Texas, were still enslaved 2 years after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation during the Civil War. It wasn't until federal troops arrived there on June 19, 1865, that Texas was forced to acknowledge emancipation and the freedom that it brought to African Americans. This story, the story of what we call Juneteenth, in some ways encapsulates American history and America's understanding of history. A lot of times we're reluctant to share that full story of what happens here in America. And so often we've intentionally forgotten history, covered up facts, hidden narratives about the things that have brought us to this moment. But the power to tell truths about American history, the good, the bad, the ugly, might be changing. There seem to be more people interested in learning the full story of how we got here and how we have come to interact with the symbols and people and physical structures that surround us now. Telling honest stories about American history is one of the reasons that the federal government recently decided to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. People all over the country are off work today during the first federal celebration of Juneteenth. And while this is about celebrating and maybe resting on a day off, it also raises its own critical questions. Is this what progress looks like? And are we on a path to creating a more equal and just America? An America where the black-white wealth gap is not so stark, where African Americans are not living in neighborhoods where there is an opportunity to move on, isn't integration, isn't all of the things that we have been promised over and over and over again? Or is all of this just symbolism? Is Juneteenth's federal holiday status some kind of empty rhetoric supported by corporate exploitation of African Americans and another opportunity to sell things off of black people? Those are pretty stark polls, of course, and the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. But I think it's really worth thinking today about what we're recognizing, what we're celebrating, and what it actually means. What it means in the context of the things that we're talking about, debating about, arguing and fighting about in this country today. That's where we begin the conversation today. And to help us think through all of this, the meaning of Juneteenth, what its federal status says about our culture, and where we're headed with all of this, is Hassan Kwame Jeffries. He is an Ohio State University history professor who specializes in civil rights and the Black Power movement. Professor Jeffries, welcome back to Detroit Today.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. So let's go back a little bit and fill in some context. I still run across people who ask me, what is Juneteenth? There are a lot of folks who just aren't filled in on what we're talking about here. So let's go back and quickly tell the story of what happened on June 19th, 1865 in Galveston, Texas.
Well, I think to begin to explain what Juneteenth is, I think we have to go back just a couple of months before that fateful day in June of 1865. In April of 1865, almost a world away on the other side of the United States, if you will, in Virginia, Robert E. Lee and the forces of the Confederacy surrendered to Union troops, effectively ending the insurrection that was designed to create a new nation from states that continued to maintain the institution of slavery. Texas was the westernmost frontier, if you will, of the Confederacy. And it wasn't the primary theater of conflict. And so once you have the surrender, effectively ending the Confederacy, and by then the Civil War had become a war to end slavery. If the Confederacy was defeated, slavery would be abolished. And it would take a little while for not just word to travel. I mean, obviously there's no internet, there's no mass communication, no instant communication. But it didn't take 2 months for black folk to hear that the Confederacy had surrendered. But it did take about 2 months for Union troops, an effective fighting force of Union troops, to make it to Texas, to make it to Galveston, Texas. So on June 19, 1865, we see landing in Galveston, Texas, not just a Union general, Gordon Granger, with an edict declaring, making known that the war had come to an end, that enslaved people were now free. But he does so with a fighting force of 2,000 to demonstrate that this will be enforced, because you had enslavers who, even when they received the word of the Emancipation Proclamation, they weren't just suddenly like, oh, okay, we didn't know y'all wanted to be free, go on out, right? I mean, it needed to be enforced. They were going to hold, they fought a bloody war to hang on to the institution of slavery, and they weren't simply going to let it disappear without a fight. And this the Union troops understood. So it took a while, not just to get word there, but to get forces there to enforce the new status quo.
Let's talk a little about slavery in places like Texas, and how it was somewhat different from slavery in other parts of the Confederacy. The western nature of Texas made it, of course, more remote than other places in the Union, but it was also, of course, the very deep South, and the idea of I guess the difference about slavery and its brutality in the deepest parts of the South, I think, is something that also is kind of lost on a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, because too often we think about slavery as one thing, frozen in time at a particular moment. Slavery, the institution of slavery in America, evolves over time. And one of the key factors that determined the nature of the institution was not only place, but place connected to the kinds of agricultural work, kinds of industrial work that enslaved labor was being asked or forced to do. And so in Texas, as part of, you know, part of Texas is at the end of what we call the Black Belt, that rich black soil, the most productive soil really in the United States, that extends in a band and a continuous band from the tidewater of Virginia all the way to Texas. And so in Texas, we're seeing, cotton plantations, not unlike we would see in the heart of Alabama and the heart of Mississippi. And those large-scale cotton plantations, those enslavers that were holding people there, they didn't want to give that up. I mean, just like in the rest of the Confederacy, this was wealth, not only the wealth translated based upon what was being produced, but the wealth in owning people, right? I mean, that was the great asset. And so it was brutally harsh, the kind of slavery that existed in Texas. And I think it's also important to point out that a number of the large numbers of the enslaved people in Texas were not born there. They were sold into Texas, absolutely, as the West, America's Western frontier pushes into that Louisiana Purchase territory over the last 40 or 50 years before the Civil War. 1 million African Americans are sold from the Upper South, Virginia, Maryland, and the like, down into Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, and Louisiana. And so their roots there, many were recently separated from the East Coast, which also spoke to that harshness of the institution, family separation. Mm-hmm. Everyone, those folk in Texas, they experienced that.
I also want to make really clear the circumstances that led to this holiday. I've had conversations with some people recently and discovered that they kind of felt like, well, the word just didn't get to Texas in time for people to be free, right? You get the Emancipation Proclamation, and they just didn't really know that that was the law of the land, and that's why slavery survived. It's actually a more pernicious story than that. I mean, this was active resistance to the idea of the institution of slavery having to come to an end, and it doesn't just wipe itself away even after the Juneteenth event. Texas fights real hard to say we want to maintain slavery.
I mean, Texas and the entire Confederacy, I mean, all of the states in the South do the same thing. When Lincoln issues the this is an Emancipation Proclamation issue. Hopefully we'll have a little time to get into that. Mm-hmm. But when the Emancipation Proclamation goes into effect on January 1, 1863, it says that all enslaved people in states that are in rebellion are henceforth free. The Confederacy, Confederates, white Southerners, they looked at the Emancipation Proclamation and laughed. They said, one, Lincoln, you don't have the physical forces in place to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation. But, you know, we're fighting a war to keep enslaved folk. And so they said they completely ignored it. It's not that they didn't know about it. They weren't waiting around like, oh, we thought we could still do this. And enslaved people knew, too. Mm-hmm. Whatever white folk knew, enslaved people knew. And sometimes before even the white folk. But they understood, too, like, all right, well, what are we supposed to do here? Who's going to enforce this? So we're biting slave folk down in Texas and Alabama and throughout the Confederacy, are biding their time, waiting for an opportunity to steal away the Union lines if they could. But they are effectively still being held in bondage despite the Emancipation Proclamation, because these white Southerners were like, no, we're not going to recognize that. And in fact, even to show the how disrespectful, if you will, the refusal of white Southerners, the Confederacy, to recognize the authority of Abraham Lincoln and Union Army, they actually issue their own proclamation declaring that all free black people in states of the North are now hereby enslaved. Mm-hmm. And they said, look, we have as much authority or power to enforce that as your Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Hassan Kwame Jeffries. He's an Ohio State University history professor who specializes in civil rights and the Black Power movement. We're talking about Juneteenth, the federal holiday that is being observed today for the very first time. It recognizes an event in Galveston, Texas on June 19th, 1865, when federal troops arrived and let the folks in Texas know that the Emancipation Proclamation, which had been signed a few years earlier by President Abraham Lincoln, had full effect in Texas. The war was over and slavery was supposed to be part of history. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. What do you make of Juneteenth and this new federal holiday? Does it signal a status change in our culture? Does it signal a fuller recognition of the cost of freedom and the constant vigilance that's necessary to make sure that people who are free can live free? Or are you worried that this is kind of empty rhetoric and an opportunity for corporations to make money off of African Americans and our issues? What do you think of this idea of celebrating something like this with the federal holiday? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can try to include you in the conversation that way. Especially want to hear what people are doing today. Are you actually finding a way to celebrate Juneteenth, or did you do something over the weekend that recognized Juneteenth? Call and tell us what that was and whether this was the first year you did it, and I guess how it made you feel. How did it feel to celebrate this event? Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones, and you can go to social media and put comments there, and we can include you that way. Before we get to callers, I want to talk about the Emancipation Proclamation. You said earlier that there are some important details about that fit into this story, and then talk about the federal holiday, this idea of commemorating this. And I'm curious what your reaction is to that.
Yeah, well, the Emancipation Proclamation is we've been living with a myth, and I think that's kindly framed.
Right.
That the Emancipation Proclamation, Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator, is what liberated African Americans. And we know, and it was clear at the time, and it's clear ever since, that Abraham Lincoln issues a preliminary Emancipation Proclamation on September 22nd, 1862, mm-hmm. To go in effect in 100 days, which would have been January 1, 1863. And it was a last-ditch effort. I mean, the Emancipation Proclamation does a couple of things. It's a last-ditch effort to appeal to the South to put down their arms. And he says, listen, if you lay down your arms right now, you can keep your enslaved people. If you lay down your arms before January 1, you can keep your enslaved people. But if not, on January 1, they're enslaved. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an olive branch to end the war. And he was, he really didn't think that they would take it, but he said, I have to do this one effort, one last try. And, the Confederacy was like, no, we don't trust you. A threat to slavery anywhere is a threat to slavery everywhere. So we reject that. And so then on January 1, it takes effect. But it only applies to those enslaved people who were in states that were under Confederate control, that were in states of rebellion. And so, in fact, and those are the states where Lincoln does not have the Union Army, the physical force, the fighting force, to actually enforce the Emancipation Proclamation. So nobody is freed by the document. And in fact, on January 1, and in fact, more people are enslaved, about 10,000 or so, because in those, and kept in slavery, many more thousands, because in those places where the Union did have control, it said that the status quo of slavery remains. And so it's unfortunate that at that moment in time, you don't see anyone being freed, but it was still an important step, mm-hmm. Because at that point, it becomes a war to end slavery, what Frederick Douglass and so many others have been clamoring for and demanding since day one, since the shots at Fort Sumter. So there's no going back. That isolates the Confederacy, because Britain and France and the European powers that had already banned the institution of slavery, abolished the institution of slavery, they were not going to come in and now recognize the Confederacy. So that keeps them isolated from getting much-needed military and economic resources. But then the other key component is that the Emancipation Proclamation allows, finally, for the recruitment and enlistment of African-American men into the Union Army. And 185,000 would eventually serve. That was a critical shot in the arm of vital manpower at a time when white Northern men were like, look, we're done with this, right? We're cool to say the Union, we ain't fighting for these black folk. And recruits, draft riots and the like were up. So it at the moment, it signals there's no going back. This is a war about slavery and a war to end slavery. And most importantly, we're now able to recruit African-Americans into the Union Army. And that is really what the Emancipation Proclamation did historically. And then last, if we just have 30 seconds,
sure.
It still was an important symbol, right? So although it doesn't free anybody, you know, on January 1, on New Year's Eve, 1863, January 1, African Americans across the free states, you know, are waiting with bated breath to see if the Emancipation Proclamation goes into effect. They're gathered at churches. This begins the watch night service tradition within the African American community, hoping that Lincoln doesn't withdraw that Emancipation Proclamation. And when word reaches them that, no, it's gone into effect, they celebrate because they know, while no one is free at the moment, that a new day has begun, that the steps necessary to bring slavery to an end, that legal recognition, are now have been taken. And so that becomes one of those emancipation moments that Black folk would celebrate for decades to come.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue talking about Juneteenth, this new federal holiday, the history behind it, and how we should all be thinking about it as we celebrate this new federal holiday. We will get Professor Jeffrey's take on this holiday and what it means and whether it is truly turning a page toward more equality, getting to the kind of root of the questions about inequality in America, or whether it's just kind of empty symbolism, which there is, of course, so much of in our culture. We'll also get to your calls and your social media comments. Ed in Detroit, Alex in Grosse Pointe Woods, Yolanda in Detroit. You will be up first. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Of course, you can also go to social media and put comments there. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest this hour is Hassan Kwame Jeffries. He's an Ohio State University history professor who specializes in civil rights and the Black Power movement. We're talking about the Juneteenth holiday, the federal holiday being celebrated for the very first time today. We're talking about Juneteenth, what it is, how it connects to the other markers and events of the Civil War, and how that casts forward into the conversations that we're having today, the renewed conversations in some cases about inequality in its many different shapes and forms, and how we eliminate that inequality. As always, we want to hear from you on the phones and on social media. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. I want to go quickly to Yolanda on the phones. Yolanda in Detroit, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. It's good to speak with you again. Last time I spoke with you, I was attending an event at Fort Pillow in Tennessee.
Oh, right. I remember that.
So I do have four ancestors who fought for the Union Army. Mm-hmm. And to me, they were victory fighters. And I have relatives who were enslaved in Tennessee. And I need to point out to everyone, and everyone needs to understand, that the Emancipation Proclamation had very limited. And it was the 13th Amendment that actually abolished slavery.
Right.
My ancestors in Tennessee were still enslaved on June 19, 1865. It was only until December 6, 1865 that slavery was totally abolished. So Juneteenth, in my opinion, is just confusing a lot of people because they don't know the full story, that freedom was a process, and that should be a phrase. Texas was just one of those stepping stones. If you are still enslaved in Tennessee and West Virginia and certain parts of Louisiana, you are still enslaved until the 13th Amendment was ratified. So I think Juneteenth is beginning to have the conversation about what was freedom, who it did affect, and people really should start reading and understanding what the Emancipation Proclamation was. It was just a presidential proclamation.
Yeah.
And it took Congress to effect an amendment to our Constitution to exclude it. So there is a lot of confusion, and children are getting confused because they're taking tests and they want to know, that question pops up, when did slavery end? And they're going to put June 19th. And the teachers I have are going to say, no,
that's
you're going
right.
to be marked down for that. So people don't know their history.
Yeah.
It's time for us to really start learning our history and bringing up those crusaders who really fought for our right. And, you know, I'm an amateur historian, and I'm constantly getting beaten down when I say Juneteenth was just martial law that was established in Texas, and that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And after the Union troops left Galveston, they went to Austin and they went to Houston and Oklahoma Territory just to put a pinpoint in the Emancipation Proclamation while the 13th Amendment was ratified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if people celebrate June 19th, I wish they would really focus in what totally abolished slavery in the United States, and that was the 13th Amendment.
You know,
December 6th.
Yolanda, I think that's a really interesting idea that maybe we're focused on the wrong event when we think about the end of slavery as an institution and the actual freedom that African Americans finally experienced. Yolanda, as always, I really appreciate your call and your perspective. But Professor Jeffries, let's talk about first your reaction to the Juneteenth holiday, but then to Yolanda's question: should we be celebrating December 6th as the day that the 13th Amendment was ratified, and that really was the end of slavery?
Well, we did. And I put we in quotes because I use the we to refer to the broader African-American community. You know, there were different, depending upon where you were in this country, there were and have been celebrations of different, what I call emancipation moments.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Massachusetts for quite a number of years, December 6, 1855, when the requisite number of states had ratified the 13th Amendment, that was the emancipation moment that was celebrated. And there would be gatherings and get-togethers, much in the tradition of what we see with Juneteenth. But that was, you know, it wasn't Texas, right? I mean, so it was Massachusetts, the North. In other places, you had the January 1 Emancipation Proclamation, the watch night services, when people would come together. That was the emancipation moment that they celebrated in Philadelphia, because that's when they remembered coming together and recognizing, okay, this is different. And then for others, later on, we see in February the emancipation moment being celebrated connected to Abraham Lincoln's birthday in Jacksonville, Florida, for example. And so, you know, is the Juneteenth is regional. I mean, Yolanda's absolutely right. I mean, this marks Texas. When these particular folk in Texas received word, there would still be people, enslaved folk in Texas for many weeks, if not months, after Juneteenth. And so is it the literal end of slavery? No, it is not. Is the technical legal end of emancipation the 13th Amendment when it's ratified? Yes. But I think it's important to recognize collectively what this symbolizes. And it symbolizes the end of the institution of slavery, the emancipation moment. And why do we connect it, or why has Juneteenth, among the others, become what we have zeroed in on? I think it's because Juneteenth had a longer lasting impression. It was celebrated longer. The December 6th celebrations faded away. New Year's watch night services became a little bit more religious. Abraham Lincoln's kind of got morphed into Negro History Week and then Black History Month. And so Juneteenth sort of hung on and hung in there, if you will, and was a tradition that Black Texans took with them as they moved into sort of a Texas diaspora, and still, you know, becomes a state holiday first. I mean, so there's sort of the logic of its evolution causes it to rise above the others as the emancipation moment that we recognize. But it should just be a point of entry in which we begin to have these broader conversations about, okay, how did slavery end? Why did it take so long? And what role did African Americans have in their own liberation?
And so when we think about this new federal holiday, and of course, you know, I mean, there are people who've done ridiculous or silly things around it. The Juneteenth ice cream is the one that stands out to me, just because that's kind of funny. But is this the right way to get people to focus on these things, even if it is, like you say, just an entry point to a much broader conversation? Is a federal holiday, why is a federal holiday important?
I think it is important. I think it's a modest step in the right direction, but it is a meaningful step. It is clear, I think two things are clear. One, you know, having Juneteenth as a federal holiday is not going to lift anybody out of poverty, right? There was no reparations checks attached to making this a federal holiday. But if we take the holiday, if we take this national recognition, a call for the nation to pause and say, okay, let's reflect on this emancipation moment. Let's reflect on what it meant, not just to end the institution of slavery, but let's reflect on the 250 years leading up to it. And let's reflect on what happened after emancipation. How did African Americans define freedom? What were the obstacles that they faced? Then, while it may not lift anybody out of poverty, if we take it seriously, then it could sure help explain why poverty persists in the racialized ways that it does, if we take the time to sort of use this as a point of entry into a broader conversation. And so, you know, it is important. There is no other moment on our calendar that we as a nation stop and say, hey, let us actually recognize that slavery was a problem and that at this moment in 1865, whatever day on the calendar you want to mark it, but at a certain point, we ended 2.5 centuries of the most extreme forms of human oppression that served as foundational to what this nation was. At that moment, we do become a different nation, one that says the institution of slavery is no longer permissible. This barbaric treatment of African Americans is no longer permissible. That sets us on a new trajectory. Democracy isn't fully realized, but we inch ever closer to it and could never fully have it as long as the institution of slavery was in place. So it is meaningful in the sense that if we give it the right meaning and do the right thing, look, if we're just buying mattresses, Juneteenth mattresses in 5 years, but that's what capitalism is, right? I mean, there are going to be Juneteenth mattress sales, right?
Yes, there will.
So it's going to happen. But that's okay. That's just the way, you know, sort of America works. It depends. It really is up to us, I think, to make sure the holiday has the meaning that the original enslaved folk attached to it with that day off, that day of remembrance, that day of saying we will never forget, but then also a day of celebrating those who led the nation into freedom.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Yolanda, always love hearing from you on the program, and thanks very much for calling today. Let's go next to Ed in Detroit. Ed, what's on your mind?
Excellent guest. Your guest and Yolanda have both covered most of the ground that I wanted to cover. So what the point I want to make is, and it follows up on your guest, one of the points he made, in countries that were part of the British Empire at the time Parliament ended slavery in that empire, many of those countries till today celebrate the anniversary of the date the law took effect as Emancipation Day. When I was a child, probably the biggest late summer event in the Detroit-Windsor area was the celebration of Emancipation Day in Windsor. And blacks from Windsor, Toronto, Detroit, Chicago, all over the Great Lakes region would travel to Windsor to participate in the celebration of the end of slavery in the British Empire.
Huh. Boy, that is absolutely new information for me, Ed, and I imagine that you may be a few years older than I am, so that may be something that didn't happen by the time I was born. But I'm really glad you called and shared that memory. Professor Jeffries, that goes to your point of the way in which African Americans in different places have acknowledged and celebrated emancipation in different ways. And as Ed points out, it's not just American. It's Africans who were enslaved in many different parts of the world.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a great point. I mean, in Washington, D.C., they celebrate Emancipation Day in April. But in New York, where you have a large Caribbean diaspora, you would often find various members of Jamaica or former colonial possessions would still celebrate their Emancipation Days as they would on the island when the calendar turned in that direction. So I think it really does speak to this idea, and the U.S. is finally catching up formally and officially, that marking emancipation is really important. And we've seen it done variously, often by the state itself, depending upon the colony, the former colonial possession. Mm-hmm. But here, I think this is actually a little bit interesting in terms of why do we do Juneteenth as opposed to sort of, you know, December with the 13th Amendment. Because Juneteenth is actually generated from the people, right? It grows out of the soil, right? It's truly Black folks celebrating their emancipation on their terms. I also think that's why there's been such a resonance for the Juneteenth as opposed to any of the other days.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this really wonderful conversation about Juneteenth and the first official federal holiday celebrating Juneteenth. We'll continue to hear from you on social media and on the phones as well. Janet in Detroit, we will get to you. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking about Juneteenth here on the day that we have the first official federal recognition of the holiday. We're talking about what it means and what we might draw from the recognition of this moment in 1865 on June 19th when federal troops arrived in Galveston, Texas, and said that folks there needed to respect the Emancipation Proclamation that had been in effect already for almost 2 years. We want to hear from you as well about how you're spending this federal holiday and celebration of Juneteenth. What are you doing that might recognize that holiday? Also, how do you think this connects to the larger narratives and discussions that we're having right now about inequality in America? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and to Twitter, put comments there, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Before we get back to our listeners, Professor Jeffries, I want to talk a little about how Juneteenth and the recognition of it connects to a particular conversation that I think has picked up real momentum in recent years, and that's the discussion of what America might owe us as African Americans, this idea of reparations, which used to get chuckles, I think, from a lot of people or just outright dismissal. And now I think there's at least a recognition that we ought to be talking about it, and there are some places where we're seeing movement on it. But I think there's a particular connection between something like Juneteenth and that discussion, and it's that. I mean, for me, the idea of Juneteenth is just a reminder that you can't take freedom for granted, no matter what the circumstances, that it is not an inevitability and it's not a self-executing idea, that it is something that requires vigilance and accountability. And that kind of thought, I think, also powers the idea of reparations.
No, I agree. And I think that is especially relevant now. I mean, we can substitute the terms. Certainly freedom is sort of a universal human freedom. But in the sort of the civic realm, the idea of democracy, democracy isn't just self-replicating, isn't self-propelling. You have to work to secure democracy, to maintain democracy, to expand democracy in the same way you have to do with freedom. And if you do not work to do it, then the very opposite will occur. You know, Dr. King, one of his, was fond of saying the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And we get very happy with that and sort of leave it there. But we don't continue on with what he wrote about in a letter from Birmingham Jail, in which he says, you know, in effect, that it will bend towards the arc of the moral universe will only bend towards justice if we exert the force necessary to bend it in that direction. Left to its own devices, it will bend towards the status quo. If the status quo is injustice, then it will bend in that direction. If it's unfreedom, if it's not freedom, then it will bend in that direction. And so I think this Juneteenth, this pause, this recognition is important because it draws our attention to this moment in the American past where freedom was not free. Freedom was not guaranteed. Freedom had to be fought for and in order to secure it and to expand it and to make sure that all Americans, all people born in the soil, all people living here, all people brought here could enjoy those basic rights. I just hope that as part of, and this I think ties into the reparations question, that once we, you know, draw our attention to what slavery actually was and what occurred after emancipation and, you know, the shortcomings of Reconstruction, and not just its failure, but its intentional undermining by white Southerners and neglect by white Northerners, then we will start to, maybe we will have seriously better understand why reparations are necessary, right? And in part because they never occurred. Mm-hmm. And we're still living with that, the long legacy, the effects of that 2.5 centuries of bondage and another century of legalized segregation and discrimination.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go back to the phones here. Janet in Detroit. This is, of course, Janet, the owner of Source Booksellers, a really vital institution here in Midtown Detroit. Janet, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stephen. I really appreciate being on, and I absolutely appreciate the shows that you have for our community. I just wanted to reiterate the fact that we had Emancipation Day celebrations in Canada when I was young. We went to a few, and that was the in Canada was celebrating the end of slavery in the British Empire. At the Source Booksellers, we have really tried to put a point on knowing and understanding. So I think, if anything, this is a time when every year, if not all the year long, to really dig into the history and understand, dig into the history and know, so we can, as your guest has said, Professor Jeffers has said, to go forward and to become knowledgeable as citizens of the United States of America, all people, but in particular African-American people, so we'll really know how this bumpy road to this time period has happened.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad to say that I think this time period is really causing people to think differently and think more deeply. Mm-hmm. So I want to offer the idea of having a day of education. Mm-hmm. We have a day of service for something else and a day of this for something else. So let's make this one the day of education on all levels so that the public can know. I want to bring up Jamon Jordan, who is our public historian and a Detroit historian. So we had a video of him done that we were showing at the store. He graciously came to do that, to talk about the wide scope of the march toward freedom, as we would say, from slavery to freedom during that time period and how it has affected us here in Detroit over the time. So I just want to put that little pin in and thank you again for the program.
No, no, it's always great to talk with you, Janet. And, of course, you're doing really wonderful work over there at Source Book Sellers. Before we get back to Professor Jeffries, I want to have one more caller in here who has got a really specific question. Janice in Detroit. Janice, go ahead.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I love our conversation. It is really so inspiring. I just, as a black storyteller, I would appreciate so much if Professor Jeffries would give us some titles, piggybacking on Janet before me, not just of education, but can you give us some titles that we can refer to so that we can continue to grow after this conversation is over with?
Yeah, it's a great question, Janice. I'm glad you called with it. Professor Jeffries, go ahead. What does syllabus look like?
You know, one of the my syllabi have changed over the years, and one of the ways in which I like to work with my students is to kind of meet them where they are. And this is a media generation, and so if I may offer a couple of videos that I think documentary films that I think will be really helpful. There's a new one released on PBS this last year on Reconstruction, which delves into sort of the emancipation moment and moves it forward. This was a Henry Louis Gates production. It was very, very well done. There is another one that's on Netflix that ties into the question of mass incarceration, but it deals with this question of the 13th Amendment, and that is that is 13th of the 13th by Ava DuVernay. Yes. That is really powerful. I'm sure you and many of your listeners are aware of. But then there's also another documentary that I would recommend, Slavery by Another Name, because this is not only about sort of the institution of slavery, but then also that transition into freedom and what comes after. And this explores convict leasing and the evolution and the rise of that as we see white Southerners determined to recreate the basic labor relations that they lost with the institution of slavery. So while slavery ends, that enslaver's mentality does not. And that informs what black folk, shapes the contours of life for African Americans for many decades after the institution of slavery is over.
Yeah, yeah. Janice, again, really great question. I'm glad you called with it. Let's go next to Lenny in Detroit. Lenny, welcome to
the
show.
Hello, yes, this is Lenny.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I just want to insert there's another reason to celebrate June 19th in recent history, because June 19th, 1972 is when the United States Supreme Court ruled 8-0 against Nixon's power grab and in favor of the White Panther Party suit against warrantless wiretaps. And the ruling by the Supreme Court in 72 is important in view of the new Supreme Court and would they have the guts to stand up against Trump's power grab? So it's all very topical, but that's why I celebrate June 19th, the end of slavery and the end of the dictatorship, or the end of potential dictatorship we were facing then, you know? It's a big holiday.
That's I did not realize that that was also on June 19th, Lenny, until you pointed that out. But that is a very important ruling, and it declared unconstitutional the wiretapping that the Nixon administration was doing on black radicals in particular in that era. So thanks very much for that that reference, Professor Hassan Kwame Jeffries. Always great to talk with you here on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining us to talk about Juneteenth.
Thank you so much for having me. Keep up the wonderful work, and happy Juneteenth.
Yes, happy Juneteenth to you as well. Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk with a Detroit Free Press writer about who owns Detroit's newest restaurants and how they can be more inclusive. Then we're going to talk with a journalist about the meaning of gentrification and how that is playing out in cities like Detroit. Detroit Today is produced by Sam Corey, Nick Austin. Our program director is Joan Isabella. Our technical director and engineer is Matthew Trevethan. And Detroit Today's music is created by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station. Your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.